Hello and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler. I'm here in the studio and with me on the show is...
Kitty LaBounty, here joining you through magic, it seems like, from the island.
That's wonderful. We are delighted to be here to talk about gardening. It's such a wonderful focus for those of us who are spending a lot of time at home. This is live. It's the call-in version of The Garden Show, and that means the number is 747-5877. We have Becky here in the building helping us. She will actually talk to you and let you know, let me know that you're ready to be on The Garden Show. We welcome your questions, your ideas, and what you're talking about and what you're doing right now. We wanted to start out by talking about... a variety of things, including that it is time to take a look at your rhododendrons and feed them.
Yes, it's a great time to do that. Rhododendrons do like to be fed maybe once, twice a year, if possible. I like to feed mine early in the spring. And then, I mean, I have to admit this, if I remember, I try to feed them also again in August. So right now I will go out and I actually buy commercial rhododendron fertilizer or evergreen fertilizer because that seems to do the best for me. The trick is with rhododendrons is to actually follow the instructions on that package. The worst thing you can do to your rhododendrons is to overfeed them. It's brutal for them. That causes more problems probably than not feeding them at all in our climate. So I would suggest doing that. And if for some reason you have no access to rhododendron food, I'd consider actually, you know, getting a little forest sort of duff and maybe spreading that under there. But my first choice is if you can get commercial fertilizer, go for it.
Rhododendrons are amazing plants in that they have a very shallow and fibrousy kind of root system. And so they don't like a lot of disturbing. So you don't have to actually work that fertilizer in any way. What you want to do is just sprinkle. If all things were perfect, you would do this on a dry day and the next day would be just a nice wet soaking rain. And that would have been perfect for sort of working that rhododendron food down in. Of course, as Kitty mentioned, not too much. One of the things that has tripped up people before is that they say, okay, well, acid-loving fertilizer, that's what we give to our rhododendrons. And everybody says, yes, 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 that's right. But there's liquid and there's granular. And in our climate, with as much rain that we have, liquid fertilizer really is not going to last long enough in the root around the roots of your rhododendrons to actually feed them. So what you do want is that something more granular, more slow release.
I think that is an awful lot easier to use too. You don't have to fuss with making sure you have the right mixture of the liquid fertilizer. So I definitely stick with the granular. A bigger problem I see with rhododendrons is when people try to grow them in lawns. So you have this kind of competing purposes going on. Your lawn doesn't necessarily like those acid conditions that your rhododendron does. So if you put all this weed and feed and calcium into your lawn, you are not doing your rhododendron any favors. So citing a rhododendron as kind of a specimen plant in lawns can be problematic.
The other thing that the rhododendrons don't like is that tight mat of the lawn on top of their roots. So neither one of these things like each other. Better to give them space from one another. And then you'll have a better luck with successfully growing both things. The other thing I think to think about the guideline for when in the spring to feed your rhododendrons is when you start to see the buds swelling. Because if you think about how your rhododendrons work, they set their flower buds last summer and they were quite small. Oftentimes we don't really pay attention that closely and notice that there's the buds are even on there, the flower buds. So once it starts warming up a little bit that and the buds start swelling, that means the plants are actively pumping things up from the soil and into the plant. And that gives you an indication that you're not just putting your rhododendron food on and it's just going to all wash away. And then you, if you think about the biology of the rhododendrons, they bloom. then with any luck, you deadhead them so that they don't spend their energy on seeds, building seeds, but they spend their energy on doing their next year's buds. And so then after the blooms are done is a great time.
Yeah, so one of the things I also wanted to remind people is that your rhododendron leaves might be looking a little ratty right now. These are the leaves that have overwintered from last spring. So the leaves tend to open up on rhododendrons, the new leaves of the year, after the flowers are blooming. So you'll notice when you deadhead those flowers, there's usually buds of leaves around it. So those new leaves will come out and look beautiful. So don't get too concerned about what your rhododendron leaves look like right now, because they've been through, you know, a whole year of growth and some tough winter weather. So the new leaves tend to look better. So and we have a caller.
We do. Hello, Dan. Are you here with us? I don't hear the line.
I don't know. Am I?
Yes, you are. Welcome,
Dan.
Yeah, you sound pretty soft at the moment, but if you could speak up, we'd love to talk with you. I don't think Dan can hear us.
Well, okay. I just have, if you can hear me, I have some products that I've used to keep the deer off of my apple trees, et cetera, here in Tenneke, and it's, you know, a commercial product that's available online.
Great. If you can hear me, go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, one of them is called Deer Scram. And it comes in as big as 5 gallon buckets. It's a powder, and it's a mixture of dried blood, garlic, and pepper. The only problem with that is the slugs really like it too. And then the other one is I don't know what it's called, but I got them off one of the gardening magazines, and it's they're little, about 2 inch long pins of garlic odor or whatever. You puncture a little hole in one side of it and just clip them onto your trees, and those work pretty well too.
All right. And how long have you been using these, Dan? Have you been using them for a while? The deer are not getting used to them?
No. The Deer Scram works good. I've been using it since I planted the apple trees in my yard here. And the only problem with that is the slugs really like it, but it seems to work pretty well, and it even lasts through, you know, it'll last for 3 to 6 weeks, I guess, around if you spread it around the tree. And the garlic stuff, I'm not the only one that uses the little garlic pins here. Certain people use them on their rhododendrons and around other stuff, and they seem to work pretty well, too.
Great. All right. Well, thanks so much for calling, and I hope the garden season is kicking off really well in Tenneke.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling, and I hope the garden season is kicking off really well.
Yeah, we seem to have a delay.
Well, it's finally warming up enough that, got the tomato plants started in the bay window, but got to wait a bit for things to warm up some more before, make sure it's going to be frost-free before I put them in my little greenhouse that doesn't really hold heat that well. So that's what I'm doing here anyway.
All right. Well, great. Thanks so much for calling and sharing your expertise. Good luck, and talk to you another time.
Yeah, I'll have to look for those deer products. I have a giant pile of seine net that I've been slowly building fences around my garden, because there is a young deer here that will not be discouraged. So I'll try those garlic hangers too. I was going to say, yeah, I'm moving things in and out from my greenhouse to my house, kind of waiting. And my tomatoes, I haven't started doing that with. They're hanging out here in the house for a while. It's warmer than it was, for sure, but it's still not really quite tomato temperatures.
Right. Even if you didn't look at a thermometer, the garden is so indicating that we have made a change from really cold nights to not so cold nights. Really, really remarkable change. I actually do have the max min thermometer in my greenhouse, so I know that it is much warmer, and we've had several nights in a row now without frost in my yard. No guarantees, don't be fooled. We still have potentially a month for the temperatures to dip back down. But the more and more warm we have, the warmer the soil will be. And plants can definitely survive a little bit of cold, especially if you have a piece of cloth or newspaper to throw over them if we get a prediction of a really cold night.
Yeah, I actually got some more hoops to build kind of bigger, more sturdy like hoop beds over all my gardens. I've been using metal hoops that I like just fine, but they're, you know, they start to age after a while, and they're also smaller. So I've been investing in, you know, more PVC and, you know, the little brackets that hold those in as another way. Because I've noticed if I keep things covered up when they're young, the deer usually don't get into those either. But sooner or later, they'll figure it out. So I'm definitely going to try those products for sure. At least some garlic. I still have a little garlic left over, so I might see if I can work my own out.
Nice. Yeah, I'm transitioning to a better hooped garden system this year as well. And we were talking about some of the options. Some are to buy PVC or PEX and, you know, attach it to the sides of your wooden garden beds. One of the strategies that we're using in our area, in our neighborhood, is pounded rebar into the ground next to it. And you can put your PVC or your PEX on and off quite easily. They're not nailed down to anything. And that way, if you want to unhook and really get in your garden and work it over, whether it's weeding time, digging time, fertilizer time, you don't have to try and work around those permanently attached pieces of piping. So we'll see how that goes. But the solution, putting that that row cover, regardless of whether you have it on the carefully constructed piping or whether you're just laying it over, which is just exactly fine, does several things. One, it's going to discourage the deer, as Kitty's thinking about. It also discourages, you know, just cats, dogs, and birds who love freshly tilled soil, and the birds especially like when you've planted some nice seeds for them. And then the other thing is soon the root maggot flies will be around. And so for your coal crops and your root crops, you're really going to do much better if you have your beds covered over.
Yeah, that's a nice little join there for me. I was able to listen to a really interesting presentation by Jesse Moan, who's with the Cooperative Extension Service from Anchorage, about basically identifying insects in your garden, both ones that can cause problems and one that can't, and ones that are beneficials or pollinators. And she spent some time talking about identification, and I can't give you a big synopsis, but to me the important takeaways were one, know what, be in your garden all the time as much as you can, check things out, use that row cover as a, you know, as a barrier for kind of most of our crops will benefit from that, from the root maggots. And then the other thing that was really fun for me, and maybe it's fun for me because it kind of underlines my philosophy, is if you want beneficials in your garden and you want pollinators in your garden, you need to have some diversity in your garden. So the more variety you have in the garden, the more beneficial insects and the more pollinators you'll have. And by beneficials, I mean insects that will eat insects that will cause you problems. So diversity and row covers and diligence, I think, is what you need to do.
It sounds like it's so beneficial in so many ways. One of my favorite beneficials in terms of specific insects are the black beetles. And they're, you know, if you're not a fan of insects, they can be a little creepy looking, but just know those big black shiny beetles around the edges of your beds are your friends. They are eating the small slugs. And there's not a lot of insects that actually eat slugs. So know that those guys are the nice guys. If you disturb them, they emit a little weird scent so that they especially aren't that great to interact with. But they truly are amazing little beetles.
Yeah, I wanted to mention kind of in conjunction with that is that your Cooperative Extension office here in Sitka is still kind of virtually open, so you can call and leave a message there, and Jasmine will get back to you and refer you to whoever else can help you with your issue, whether they're in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau. But that office is still open, air quotes, open for business. So, and they have a wealth of information and a lot of different agents over the state. So I would make use of that resource.
The great thing about the Cooperative Extension in Alaska is it's all about Alaska. And so online you can find a lot of great info sheets on lots of different gardening topics. But the ones that come out of the Alaska Extension are obviously Alaska specific. And our conditions and how we do things and our specific problems are just that. They're specific to us. So those are great resources for Alaska gardeners. 747-5877 is the number. This is the live call-in version of the Garden Show. Feel free to give us a call if you have a question, or even if you just want to suggest that we talk about some topic or another, either this week or next week. One of the things that I got a question about was the habit of collecting sea stars for gardens. And so we would like to have a little bit of a conversation about that. Now, we know in remote places where there isn't any suitable access to buying or getting other products to serve your garden, that might have been a reasonable solution. But here in Sitka or in more populated parts of our Southeast Alaska, that's probably not the most responsible thing to do. Sea stars are an apex predator in the intertidal zone, and they need to be able to be there to keep the balance of everything that's happening. And then we've just been through a terrible wasting disease of sea stars. So we really want to, preserve them and keep them in their habitat.
So I wanted to think about some alternatives for you if you're used to using sea stars in your garden. So the basically that skeletal structure of a sea star is mostly calcium carbonate. So I'm thinking that people are wanting to get calcium in their garden, plus you're going to get a boost of phosphorus and a little nitrogen as well. So we can kind of take that apart and see what we can get in other places. I agree that it's probably the easiest way to get maybe some phosphorus and nitrogen if you don't have access to commercial products. But for those of us around herring spawn areas, I would really recommend grabbing herring eggs. If you want calcium carbonate, I would think about shells, and we'll come back to that after this caller.
Hi, you're here on the Garden Show. Hello, can you hear me? All right, we have a caller with a question. We are going to need you to call back.
So in the meantime, I'll rattle on about shells. So if you want calcium carbonate, one, and maybe easy isn't the right word for this, there's a couple of different solutions. If you have access to a boat and to a shell sand beach, you can actually collect some of that shell sand. The other way you can approach it is by collecting seashells, dead shells, right? There's seashells all over the place, clam shells or whatever, and smashing them. Be careful to wear eye protection when you do this. And I've been smashing oyster shells, so I have some experience with this. But it's not a bad way to get calcium in your garden, and you're using a resource that's basically there for the picking up and is no longer living.
All right. We have had some help from our wonderful general manager. And just a reminder that the Sitka Cooperative Extension telephone number is 747-9440 if you wanted to jot that down. Again, 9440 if you wanted to call and find out, how you might access the information that's available about gardening in Alaska through the Cooperative Extension Service. Again, we know we're sheltering and hunkering and all of those things, and so offices and places aren't open, but there's so much incredible service people are offering to one another. So just give a call and see how you can access that.
I had a question about herring eggs also. A friend was concerned that people are actually gathering the live eggs off of the, or the viable eggs, let's say, off of living seaweed in the water, you know, scraping them off of rocks and things. So maybe I'll just clarify is that mostly what people, I'm hoping this is mostly what people are doing, is gathering the eggs once they've been washed onto the beach and are no longer likely to spawn. So they're picking them up really in the drift line or up in the sand line. So that's where you want to get your herring eggs. You know that those ones are very unlikely to make it back into the sea and hatch.
And there's generally a very rich amount of that happening on a beach where the herring have spawned. So, yeah, once they've rolled up onto the beach and been through a couple cycles of waves and sun and wind, they're not going to be a viable herring anymore. So perfect resource to build your garden. Right now in Sitka, if you've access to Cruise Off Island, there are many, 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 I can't remember how many manys I need to say to actually convey this, herring eggs just loose on the beach that will just be shared and eventually, you know, go away. So if you have access to that, you could get a whole bucket full really easily.
Yeah, and a little bit kind of goes a long ways as far as I can tell. You know, I'm somewhat limited by the fact that I have to carry it home. So my buckets, if I fill a few buckets and bring them home and spread it out, kind of dig it into the garden, I'm feeling fairly wealthy. If you don't have access to that, I think a mixture of bone meal and blood meal, if you have access to a store, is a great mix of nitrogen and phosphorus for your garden. So there's lots of different ways to tackle the problem of feeding your garden. And there's also seaweed. Don't forget the seaweed.
Seaweed compost is not highly nitrogenous like the herring eggs and the other animal-based products, but it's fantastic for micronutrients and to build healthy soils. You can also use coffee grounds if you have access to brewery waste or other agricultural products. Guinea pig, rabbit, and goat manure you can use fairly directly into your garden this time of year. If you have access to some of the other manures, chicken, horse manure, for example, compost those first, or at least let them hang around for a while and do their own composting, because they're going to be too hot to put directly onto a garden that you're going to either have perennials growing or that you're going to plant into really soon.
Yeah, I would strongly encourage people to, if you're lucky enough to get any horse manure, definitely compost it well before you use it. And even some of the goat manure, you can put it directly in your garden, but one thing I've noticed is that often when I've been given goat manure, it has a mixture of the bedding in it, which can have weed seeds. So I've started to kind of compost that separately first, not because the goat manure has an issue, but perhaps some of the bedding will have some weed seeds. So it's just something to be cognizant of.
And if you don't have access to any of those products that, you know the animals, you know where they're coming from, there's no harm in purchasing animal manures from the nursery. Chicken manure is good, so steer manure. I mean, these are all reasonable, organically based products to put in your garden for added nutrition. If you're like many people who garden in Southeast Alaska, you garden in a fairly concentrated space over and over, and you deplete the nutrients in a season or two. And so you're really going to go downhill on your productivity if you're not constantly adding back.
Yeah, and I've even noticed I have an organic soil. And so by building the raised beds, you know, I've increased the decomposition rate in that. And you can watch those raised beds kind of sink. So I'm having to add more compost and more material into that to kind of counter that. Now, I want that decomposition rate to increase because I want that those nutrients to be available and I want the soil to be warm, but I do have to keep adding back because of that process. So gardening, it's never like, oh, you've done it once and you're done now in terms of amending your soil or pulling weeds or anything. It's a commitment, and hopefully it's a commitment that you enjoy, because honestly, you know, you can probably buy food cheaper. You can probably buy some flowers cheaper. But gardening gives you so much joy in terms of going out to your garden and picking your own food or your own flowers, that I really recommend it. But I don't recommend it as a labor-saving device.
Or necessarily a money-saving device. But, yeah, one of the things I love about gardening is the taste of it. And I think that's the thing to also give yourself a break on. You may not feed your family, as we're discussing, but boy, will you have some taste treats and exploring different flavors and different ways to use things. One of our future shows will be about herb gardening, and you can get a lot of value from growing herbs because they're small and fairly easy to manage.
Right. So I don't want to say that you can't grow a lot of food and you can't save it and feed your family for a year, but most of us probably won't accomplish that. So don't feel bad if you're not, but please enjoy what you have. It's so satisfying to me to go out and pull a carrot or grab a head of lettuce from the garden and bring it back in and smell the flowers as I walk by. So I hope you're getting a lot of satisfaction from planting your garden and from thinking about your garden and from getting it started. But don't indulge in guilt with your garden.
No, we're against that. So a couple things to think about for the coming weeks. We want to have a show talking about pruning and in terms of spring pruning and what to do. So you might think about what your questions are, and you're welcome to send them to us in advance. We also will talk about planting potatoes. We're not going to get into that today, but we will remind you that if you want to be ready to plant your potatoes, you can do what's called greening up.
Yeah, so what I like to do is the potatoes that I'm going to plant out in the garden, I will put them in the window so that they start sprouting and greening. So I don't want them to sprout in their bags, you know, where I have them stored, because then you end up with these long, spindly, crazy little tendrils that just break off. But I want those sprouts to be sturdy and green. So I'll just have this little row of potatoes out in the window, and that really gives them a boost.
They can be planted before frost-free, assuming that you have at least a little bit of soil covering over them. But remember that if your bed is very cold, and what we're going to talk about is digging down, that's going to be an even colder part of your bed. So there's, you know, it's probably not too early to plant potatoes, but there's certainly no rush. But we'll go into the depths of planting potatoes on our next show. The other thing we wanted to touch base again on is this idea of hardening off. And all that means is taking your plants that are growing in and out.
Yeah, I've been moving quite a bit of plants back and forth. Like I said, they're in the house during at night and move them out. I cover them with row covers so they don't get a big shock of light. But that I do that over several days before I let them just sit out in the greenhouse, you know, a day round. There we go. But I'm still planting seeds, and I'll keep on doing that until probably through June.
The other plants that I'm doing the in and out on right now are my fuchsias. It's way too early to have a tender fuchsia hanging out waiting for warm weather, but it is great to take them in and out, get them a good water and a little bit of a taste of the breeze and the sun as we go forward. Well, thanks so much for joining us on The Garden Show. We'll be back next week at this time. Send us your questions and topics, and we'd be delighted to talk about them.
Well, happy gardening. Talk to you next week.
And 747-5877 is the number if you want to call us and suggest this for next week after we get off the air. Coming up next, more great programming across the day from Raven Radio. And if you enjoy The Garden Show, don't hesitate to support this station. Thanks again for The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler, and you're listening to KCAW Sitka.